Good afternoon, and welcome to Duke in Ultim, which means go out into the deep. A one-hour program hosted by Rita Lane. Join us as we take up our nets and follow Jesus into the depths of the abundant life.
Hello, my dear friends. Praise be Jesus Christ, now and forever. Amen. I'm Rita Hauck Lane, your host for this next hour, as we delve deeper into life with Jesus, because life with Jesus is great. I'm finally back here after a few weeks being off for the holidays and being away for part of that time, and I've really missed you, and I'm so glad to be back here. I'm a little out of kilter because I haven't been here in a few weeks, so I feel like, you know, I'm a newbie at this already, which is kind of silly. But I ask the Lord to richly bless you, heal you, and give you peace as we spend this time together. And I'm asking him to pour out his spirit upon us as we as you listen, and as I share with you some of the my job is to share with you some of the things that have that come through my life regarding current events and scriptures and church life and everything to that the Lord gives me to share with you. It's an encouragement, I hope, because that's what I'm really, my biggest mission in life is to encourage you in your walk. I've been encouraged myself. I just want to give it back. And first of all, let me say I hope and pray that you had a very nice Christmas and a Happy New Year holiday. I know some of you, it was challenging for some of you, but I still pray that you had some really wonderful moments in those holidays. And for the rest of us who, you know, had just a normal holiday, I pray that it was really good for you. It was really nice for me. You know, nothing new or exciting, but it was really a lovely time to spend with family and friends and with the Lord. You know, so I thank him for that. Yesterday was the feast of the baptism of the Lord, excuse me, which ended the Christmas season for many Christians. However, some celebrate until February 2nd, which is Candlemas and the presentation of the Lord in the temple, the baby Jesus in the temple, February 2nd. And it's kind of funny, in the United States and, you know, many countries around the world, you know, Christmas season is over as of yesterday. Some Christians don't even know that Christmas Day begins the Christmas season. They think it ends Christmas, but it begins the Christmas season. And part of that is the fault of us doing everything before Christmas Day instead of saving some things to do after Christmas Day, like Christmas plays, holiday open houses, those kind of things. All of those things really could or should be after Christmas Day during the Christmas season. It's when you have more time to just relax and to enjoy these type of things and to be creative about how to celebrate the Christmas season. So one thing that I read was, and I'll share that with you later. I'm not going to jump ahead. But basically, I'm one of those ones that leave my Christmas stuff up until February 2nd inside my house. I turn my lights outside off after today, because I forgot to turn them off today. But inside, I leave the Christmas stuff up until February for a second. And I love it because it takes some time. It gives me some time to adjust to the fact that Christmas is coming to an end. And also, I can relish and ponder and enjoy the season that in a way that I couldn't before Christmas Day because of all of the craziness that goes on. It's good craziness, but craziness that goes on beforehand. But so anyway, Pope Benedict XVI, in one of his general audiences in January of 2011, made the case for and encouraged we Christians to observe Christmas until February 2nd. And a great number of countries do that, especially in Europe. You can go, in fact, a lot of people don't go to Europe for Christmas before Christmas Day. They wait until the Christmas season, and then they go after Christmas Day, and they have all of the beauty of the season still going on, and special events and everything, and they're not in the crazy crowds of tourists that come before Christmas Day. So it's really a wonderful time to go to Europe to celebrate Christmas is after Christmas Day during the Christmas season. So tuck that in your hat for maybe next year you might want to do that. But either way, in the Catholic Church, we Christians do not stop celebrating Christmas on Christmas Day. In fact, we've been, you know, doing a few things over the last couple of weeks, and every time I go by a house that still had its lights up, especially last night after the football game, it's like, oh, thank you for leaving your lights up. It gives me joy, you know, that sort of thing. So anyway, one of the things that I read recently, I really want to share it with you because it really has encouraged me. And I know there's a lot of people out there that don't really care for winter. And I want to share a few things with you that maybe will help you deal with winter. But first of all, I wanted to share with you my own personal kind of story. I grew up in Florida and Southern California. And I moved here quite a few years ago for the four seasons. I never had four seasons, really. And so I moved here for the four season and especially for snow. Yes, yes. I left the beautiful climates of Florida and California for snow. And I love it, still love it. When I was younger and a little more fit, I would go over to friends' houses and dig them out after snowstorms just because I loved it so much. Yeah, it sounds a little crazy, but I really do love snow, and I love, love, love it when it's snowing. So anyway, I wanted to share with you a few things I got online to lead up to one of the things I wanted to share with you that I read recently. But, you know, as you well know, winter brings a lot of different emotions to different people. Some can't wait for it to snow. They're thrilled. They can't wait to go out and play with their children in the yard in the snow and to make hot cocoa and cookies, whether they have children or not, and watch good movies at the fireplace and snuggle up and throw snowballs and just be sitting in the house and reading a nice book and watching the beautiful flakes fall. Some people just love it, and it's a part of the year that they really relish, and that's me. But anyway, others, they dread the cold. They don't like the darkness that comes with snow and winter. They don't like the idea of cleaning off ice and snow from their cars and then, you know, the driveways and walkways and the dangerous driving conditions, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a full gamut of emotions about winter because it's unpredictable to a degree, you know, even more so than some of the other seasons. But regardless of what you think about of snow and winter, it is one of the four seasons that God intentionally created as a part of nature's rhythmic cycles. You know, it has its benefits to nature and to us. And so therefore, it is a blessing given to us by God. And there are ways to deal with it that will bring you know, joy and happiness and also some growth, you know, some quiet time. So it's really a God-given time of rest and beauty, a chance to pause and ponder and slow down. You know, if you're like me, you're always, you know, busy. You're always going places. You have a lot of responsibility. It's like, I don't want to slow down. You know, I don't want to slow down. Oh, no, we have a snow day, you know. But I've learned, just go with it and have fun. So what I want to share with you are some scriptures from the Bible about winter and snow. Not many, just a few. And so one of them is from Isaiah 55. Let me get this other one out here. Okay. As the rain comes down and the snow from heaven, and do not return there, but water the earth and make it bring forth bud, that it may give seed to the sower and bread to the eater, so shall my word be that goes forth from my mouth. It shall not return to me void, but it shall accomplish what I please, and it shall prosper in the thing for which I sent it. So here the Lord is saying, you know, the rain comes down, the snow comes down. A lot of times rain and snow are inconvenient. They're not the easiest weather to deal with. Yet he says here they're essential. It waters the earth. It brings forth flowers and buds and growth. It gives seeds in time. And the one who has the seeds and the benefits of making flour and that sort of gives us bread. So it's all a cycle that the Lord has put together. And he says, just like that cycle is, when he has given us his word, and when his word is proclaimed, like I'm sharing this with you, he says, it will not return to him void. It shall accomplish what he pleases and shall prosper the thing for which he sent it. So therefore, the word of God is powerful. And when you hear it, it plants seeds in your mind. And you're able to receive things that you didn't receive before because of the power of the word of God and the power of him sending winter here. It is for our good. So let's look at another one here. Okay. Genesis 8:22. God's promise of seasonal cycles. It says, as long as the earth endures, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night will never cease. This verse follows the story of Noah's Ark and the flood, and it's a promise from God about the enduring natural order of the world. These are natural things that happen. Some are catastrophic, some are not, but they're all a part of how the world is maintained, prospers, etc. And so he's telling us in these scriptures that, you know, it might seem you know, catastrophic, it might seem difficult to deal with winter, deal with the rain and all of those inclement weather things, that he's still bringing good out of that, and that it's just a part of the natural cycle of life, and that we can trust him to bring about fruit from that. And then we got Job, good old Job 37. Job is saying, he says to the snow, fall on the earth, and to the rain, shower, be a mighty downpour. So it highlights God's control over the natural world, including winter elements like snow and rain. Serves as a metaphor for God's power in our lives, reminding us that just as he commands the weather, He oversees our personal trials and triumphs. So, you know, the Lord speaks to us through nature. You know, the four seasons are there. They correspond with our lives. So it's really nice that the Lord gives us something to see to encourage us and let us know. First of all, we can't control the weather. We keep trying and it doesn't work. We can't really predict the weather. We keep trying and it works part of the time but doesn't work all the time. In fact, a lot of times they can't even tell us what's going to happen tomorrow. So we're still working on it. The Lord's still helping us to get better at it, but we're a far cry from being God. We cannot control the weather. So he just wants us to know that these cycles are normal and that he is a part of life. We're not in heaven yet. It's a part of this life, and that it will come. He will make good come out of the bad. So just like he did with Job. And then Psalm 74:17. It was you who set all the boundaries of the earth. You made both summer and winter. And God is the creator of the seasons. He is. And so therefore there's wisdom in it. He does not do anything that is not purposeful, deliberate. We have four seasons for a reason. And enjoy the winter. But I have something here, okay. In the Epoch Times, I've told you about that newspaper before. You might want to check into a subscription to it, whether it's digital, print, or both. It's a fabulous newspaper, the Epoch, E-P-O-C-H, Times. And it's a wonderful newspaper that comes usually for the weekend, and it has five sections or so, give or take, and they're on different elements of interest in life. And in this particular one issue, it was in the life and tradition section, and it's called A Case for the Cold, Dark Season. And it really, really, really resonated with me because I love winter, and I don't find it challenging anymore. But when I first moved here, I did. I wasn't used to dark, dreary days, and I hate to say it, but I had to go to a tanning salon to get fake sun to get me through some of those days, because it was very difficult coming from sunshine my whole life. So nonetheless, I got through it. Took me a couple of years, but I got through it, and I adjusted, and I love it. So anyway, this article is A Case for the Cold, Dark Season, How the Scandinavians Thrive During Winter. And I'm going to read some of it. But the author is from New Jersey. Carrie Leibowitz. She wrote a book, How to Winter. And I bought the book because I have friends that need encouragement. And plus, I'm always open to new good ideas about how to make life better. So her book, How to Winter, it's how the Scandinavians thrive during winter. She grew up in New Jersey and an absolutely avid winter hater before she went off to college in Norway. She went to college in Norway because of the specialty that she was in. But the town where she went to college is located in one of the northernmost parts of the world, a place where the polar night lasts for about 2 months. If you don't know what polar night is, it's about 2 months without sunshine. There's a kind of dusky look at times, but it's you know, over 2 months without sunshine. Now, I don't know anyone that wouldn't affect. But she was there studying. And it says here, her research focused on how the residents of this Norway town approach winter, and she found that they find joy, comfort, and excitement in those dark, dark months. And the article goes on to say, winter brings cold, wet weather, dull gray days, and the annoying task of scraping ice off the car windshield, and it also affects our emotional health. Leibowitz talks about the sluggishness and tiredness that some experience. There is also the decrease in social activities, which can lead to wintertime depression that makes the season a dangerous time of year. But rather than dwell on the negative aspects of the issue, she's quick to share what she learned. It doesn't have to be that way. And she found that out in the deep dark of Norway. And then she says, winter blues a myth? She gets right to the heart of the matter in the first chapter. She had arrived at this northern Arctic area assured that she would see signs of seasonal affective disorder that goes hand in hand with winter. On the contrary, studies showed that the residents of Tromsø had low rates of seasonal depression. There was little, if any, evidence that the locals experienced an onset of the winter melancholy that plagues so many. Could it be, as some believe, simply a popular myth? Based on that discovery, Leibowitz changed the focus of her research from whether the Scandinavian people suffered from the winter blues to why aren't they more depressed during such intense winters. Tromsø, the city's inhabitants, saw winter as something to be enjoyed, not endured. They believed it to be a cozy time of year, as they called it, kosling. The first hint of their winter embrace was the lighting of candles in cafes, restaurants, and home windows. Rather than see the polar night as a time of darkness, they appreciated the illumination they did get, such as the streaking and flowing northern lights and the soft blue haze that Leibowitz noticed seemed to blanket everything in sight. It all came down to their mindset. Humans tend to give more attention to the negative, she suggests. The author suggests that we dwell on the winter's cold when we should consider it refreshing. Don't be cranky at the slowdown of social activities, but appreciate this quiet time to slow down and become reflective. It reminds me of the phrase in a lot of self-help books that goes something like when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. In this article, it's about Carrie Leibowitz's book, but it's written by M.J. Hanley Goff, and it's in the Epoch Times, and I'm going to be talking about that for a little while. But I wanted to stop right here about the winter blues. All right, I know that it's true, because I experienced it myself, but if I had had some of these suggestions to help me have a different mindset and to see the possibilities of that dark time when I first moved here, I know I would have come through it much, much easier and much better. But first of all, she mentions in there that she started to appreciate the things that were happening as she was living there, like the northern lights and the special light that would, the bluish light that was on everything during those dark months. And so first of all, she's looking at the beauty of nature and appreciating that season's beauty that's not there the rest of the year. That's what we can do. That's what we can do. I love looking at the snow out on the ground. I love it when it's falling. I love at night being able to see into the woods and the critters walking around because the snow reveals them to us. And I like the cold weather because that's part of the four seasons. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But basically, this is one line that really stuck out to me. When we dwell on the winter's cold, we dwell on the winter's cold when we should consider it refreshing. Refreshing, because it is. Think about in the summertime when it's so sweltering hot, so humid, you don't want to do anything. And in some ways, you can't do anything, much of anything outside because it's so hot. It's extremely uncomfortable, at least in the winter. You can bundle up and go out and do some things. So think of it as refreshing. And then don't be cranky when social activities slow down. Come up with some new social activities to do. And also take some quiet time to just sit, drink some hot cocoa, read that book you haven't had a chance to read. Just really kick your feet up once in a while or clean out a closet. Something that will help make the day a better day for you. Lift your spirits. I finally got to read that book. I'm so happy. Oh, I finally got the closet cleaned out. I'm so happy. You know, call friends that you haven't talked to in a long time and talk about how beautiful the snow is or, you know, what's up with them and that sort of thing. There's so many ways to celebrate winter, okay? And then another short thing, she says, in addition to encouraging readers to rethink the season, the author provides doable practices to start the process to the aptly named chapter, What You See is What You Get. Readers are given a series of easy-to-do exercises that cost little more than our attention. One example is Notice Nature. In her travels through the temporary homeland, she saw pancake ice, a term for the shapes that form when moving water freezes into flat, blob-like pancakes. Paying attention to sunsets for their extraordinary vibrancy at this time of year, or the sound of hail or rain falling against the windows, were examples of strengthening a positive wintertime mindset. We take photos of everyday activities, so Leibowitz suggests finding a winter scene each day and capturing it with a cell phone photo and share it on Facebook or with your friends. Look at this beautiful thing I saw today, right? One change that Leibowitz embraced during this time was what she referred to as the big light off. Big light off. This is when the large overhead lights inside rooms would be turned off. In their place were twinkling ones, candles, and soft lamps. Okay, so turn off your big overhead lights that are so stark, and in their place put soft light lamps, twinkly lights, you know, mini lights, candles, that sort of thing. I read in a book a couple of years ago, this one author I really admire, she says that she takes those little fairy lights. You can get these battery-packed or plug-in fairy lights, the little teeny tiny things, that, and you can put them all over your house and leave them there during the wintertime to lift your spirits. I bought some and I did it, and I'm telling you, it works. I have them in various tables, in in artificial trees, various things, and they light up my house. It's warm and cozy. It's inviting. I love staying there. I love coming back to there because of these lights. And I use more candles in the wintertime because, you know, Jesus is the light of the world. He came to bring light, and light is a symbol or an indication of Him. So when you light your candles, say, Light of the world, Jesus Christ, I light this candle in your honor. Come and be in our home today. I have to take a break, and so please stay with me. Come back. We're going to talk a little bit more about this and some other things. And God bless you and keep you till we come back in a few minutes.
You're listening to In His Sign, Catholic Radio. Empowered by the Holy Spirit, bringing the fire of God's love to the world. We often think of the scripture where the disciples were walking to Emmaus, where they said, Were not our hearts burning within us as Jesus spoke to us on the road? As we travel along the road together in our Archdiocese of Philadelphia and Camden Diocese, we thank God for our loyal circle of family and friends. Please consider sponsoring one of our new programs in the name of your parish priest, family member, or friend. It would be a beautiful way of helping us to proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ, our risen Lord. Give us a call at 610-527-2906 or visit us on the web at inhissign.com.
Welcome back. I'm Rita Hocklane, your host for the next half hour. We've been talking about a few things in the last half hour, of which was Christmas season and also winter. And so I ask you to hang in there with me. I have an announcement to make, though, on February, the weekend of February 7th, the 7th, 8th, and 9th this year, at the Malvern Retreat House, beautiful, magnificent, wonderful place to go. Kathleen McCarthy is having a retreat, and it's for men and women. It says, seeking a new release of the Holy Spirit in their lives, turning a spark into a burning fire in my heart. And they quote St. Paul's letter to Timothy, for this reason I remind you to kindle afresh the gift of God which is in you. And Monsignor Stephen McHenry will be the co-host of this retreat, and he's one of the broadcasters here too. He's here on Fridays, and wonderful retreat. Check out the Malvern Retreat House. It begins like Friday evening and then goes through midday Sunday. They feed you all your meals. They have lovely accommodations and great speaking, wonderful prayer life and mass. And you really do grow when you go to these. They're fabulous. I will be there as much as I can be. And so if you come, please come up to me and let me meet you, all right? But basically, this is for you. This is a way for you to get a burning fire in your heart for the Lord and for others. So check that out at the Malvern Retreat House. It's February 7th through 9th this year. Okay, back to the good of winter. I'm reading an article in the Epoch Times by M.J. Hanley-Goff. She's reviewing a book, How to Winter, How the Scandinavians Thrive During Winter when they have 2 months of darkness. And so anyway, the next thing is holiday lights. This heralded the time of day for reading, resting, and snuggling. This can also mean disconnecting from screens, which disturb sleep quality. The holiday lights that made the neighborhood feel warmer and more communal were kept up until March. I'm going to say that again. The holiday lights that made the neighborhood feel warmer and more communal were kept up until March, a tradition that the writer suggests should become more widespread. She says it's a shame that in most places Christmas lights are expected to come down in early January during the darkest part of the year. I'm taking that to heart. I might leave my lights up another week, but what I want to do next year is... My husband loves colored lights, so do I, so we decorate the exterior of our house with colored lights. So I'm going to get lights, white, beautiful icicle lights, and I'm going to put them up for turning on after the Christmas lights are turned off. And I'm going to leave those winter icicle lights up until March. Because I know how it makes me feel to see those beautiful white lights everywhere in the wintertime at Christmas time. Why not leave them up? Why not? Why not? Now they have LED ones that don't use hardly any energy. and they make your heart sing. You'll be coming home and going, oh, look at those beautiful winter lights. You know, I'm going to do that. I suggest that perhaps you might want to ponder that yourself, because it encourages, it gives, it lightens the darkness after Christmas. It helps with the letdown after all of the beauty of Christmas. It encourages other people that see it to, you know, relish the beauty of it. So it's like a gift to your neighbors. And, you know, I might even write them all a little letter and say, look, you know, I haven't forgotten to take my Christmas lights down. This is why I'm doing this. And, you know, if you want to join me, join me. If you don't, okay. So anyway, so she says, you know, it's a shame that in most places, Christmas lights are expected to come down in early January during the darkest part of the year, and some of the saddest parts of the year because of all the beauty of the Christmas season is now not there, you know, as far as, you know, people's attitudes and going out and just all the wonderful things that happen around Christmas. So then she goes on, if we remain cooped up in the winter, we will feel winter's limitations. She reminds us to dress appropriately, repeating a common Scandinavian phrase, there's no such thing as bad weather, only bad clothing. Scandinavian phrase, there's no such thing as bad weather, only bad clothing. She recommends headlamps to see in the dark and stretchable cleats for shoes when it's icy. When we've equipped ourselves for a winter walk and ignore the urge to sit at home, there's sweet rewards at our return, a hot cup of tea and cozy slippers. You know what it's like when you're outside and it's cold and you come in the warmth? It warms your heart, not just your body. It's wonderful. There's a bigger picture at play here, she says, that if one can change one's mindset about winter, one can think of the other limiting beliefs that have the potential for change. When we can face challenges such as an outside adventure, when we'd rather stay on the couch, changes in other areas of our lives may become possible. So, nonetheless, I just encourage you to really, really make the best of winter. We're having one of the most wintry winters that we've had in years here in Pennsylvania. I've been very disappointed the last few years. We didn't have last year, I think we had a dusting. We didn't even have snow last year. And so I'm thrilled that even though we haven't had enough for me, we have had cold weather that's kept what did fall on the ground for a while to be able to see it and enjoy it. Now, as part of the whole winter thing, I'd like to read to you a little something from, I told you about these four seasonal books that Father John Bartunek wrote, Spring, Summer, Fall, and Winter Meditations, based on the seasons. And he does tie the seasons to our life experience and how we need to get back to living in sync with the seasons, because it helps to order our lives in a way that's beneficial and brings joy and peace of mind. If we're always trying to do the same stuff all the time and make every day the same and ignoring nature, that is there for a reason to remind us that we are creatures who need to have seasons in our lives, then we handicap ourselves in a way, all right? And in the beginning of the book, he says, you don't need scientific studies to tell us today's culture is out of touch with nature, even though plenty of such studies are available. It says, few of us postmodern people are able to live our lives in harmony with the natural rhythms of the earth. It's really funny. Most of us have a real deep commitment to protecting the environment, doing our part, you know, within reason, And we love the sunsets, the sunrises. We love the snow. We love the flowers, all that nature brings to us. But we refuse to live in union with the nature of who we are and the nature that surrounds us and the way that God created us to be. The way that God created us to be. So he goes on to say, we make daytime seem like nighttime and nighttime seem like daytime. We can make winter feel like summer and summer feel like winter. We can travel from the tropics to the tundra in less than a day, from the mountains to the sea in an afternoon. We can find whatever fruits or vegetables we want in our local grocery store, regardless of whether they're supposed to be in season or out of season. And, you know, so we haven't learned and control the change of seasons or natural disasters with technology, but our day-to-day, month-to-month, and year-to-year lives have, in general, gotten out of sync with the natural rhythms of the earth we were created to live in. This can cause problems. As human beings, our lives are meant to unfold in harmony with the natural world. The seasons, the processes of nature, the rhythms of this world, our world, were created out of love of God for us and given to us as a home. As a home and a place to learn and to flourish. They have something to tell us about our deeper identities, the purpose of our lives, and the way to live our lives to the full. When we cut ourselves off from direct, regular, and necessary contact with and dependence on this natural environment, we threaten to sever an ancient and irrepressible link to authentic wisdom. So that's why he wrote these books. Because he wants us to remember and reconnect with this essential dimension of our humanity. So I'm going to read out of the winter meditations. Remember in the article we were just talking, I was just reading to you, or she says it's a good time to grab a book or just to, you know, sit back and relax a little bit, which we don't normally do in the other seasons. And so I'm going to read from chapter 3 called Stillness. Stillness. And this is, again, from Father John Bartunek's Winter Meditations book. It's just a little wonderful book. We have the impression that the earth sleeps underneath its winter blanket of snow. We tend to think of that sleep as a dormancy of life, a passive waiting for spring and vitality. Yet any healthy sleep is more than passive waiting. Animals, including humans, need sleep. Sleep rejuvenates us physically and psychologically. When we close our eyes and curl up for a night of rest, we withdraw from exterior activities and allow interior replenishment to happen. After a good night's sleep, we awake refreshed. Something happened to us. Revitalization took place from the inside out and never could have happened any other way. Something similar happens to the soil during the winter months. In the spring and summer, the ground swells with fresh vitality. But that flow of new life has been prepared through the long winter of apparent stillness and withdrawal. Winter is the season when the remnants of above-ground life surrender themselves to the earth. Instead of pushing life up and out, the soil pulls back and the chemical and biological elements recede and go to work under the blanket of snow. So in other words, you know, you have things that, leaves that have dropped. You have annual plants that die and they're on the ground. And it looks like, oh, well, you know, it's done with. But in reality, those elements, those things that appear to have died, are the food for the following year, to fuel the soil for the following year. And so he's saying that These elements recede and go to work under the blanket of snow. The blossoming of springtime is the morning wake-up of an earth replenished by the hidden but vital processes of winter's frosty cover. So it looks dead out there, but it's not. The earth is replenishing. It's like taking a sleep that replenishes you and revitalizes you. And when you wake up, when the seeds wake up and the plants wake up in the spring, they are revitalized and nourished and ready to go because of winter. Okay? And then he goes on to speak of us, for our spirits to flourish, for our capacity for creativity and virtue to thrive, we must experience periods of external stillness and apparent inactivity. Yes, we need permission to be still. And he is telling us, you don't need permission. It's a part of the natural part of life that you need to embrace. We all need to embrace it. To stay healthy and energetic in our external activities, we must allow ourselves times of contemplation, of unhurried thought, reflection, pondering. Winter is an icon of this kind of deep thought. Its stillness, even starkness, belies a hidden fruitfulness being prepared in the depths of the earth. We also have hidden depths in our minds and souls. But if we never give ourselves time for reflection and thoughtful observation, the fruitfulness will be easily depleted and we will feel scattered, overextended, and spiritually anemic. If we never give ourselves time for reflection and thoughtful observation, the fruitfulness will be easily depleted and we will feel scattered, overextended, and spiritually anemic. Sometimes summer crops thrive before the midsummer solstice, but their growth loses momentum afterwards. Even chemical fertilizers can't always jumpstart this kind of sputtering. The soil simply lacks sufficient vitality. Its winter failed to supply enough replenishment, like a poor night's sleep. When we mindlessly follow the frenetic pace of most folks, when we mindlessly follow the frenetic pace of postmodern life, working hard to get the competitive edge, filling our free time with activity after activity, and bombarding ourselves with external stimuli during our recreation, the soil of our souls can easily become depleted. We are not meant to be plugged in 24/7. Our spiritual summers depend upon the hidden processes of interior renewal that occur through relaxed thought and contemplation, through periodically withdrawing from external activity to reflect on what's happening interiorly in our spiritual lives, in our lives, period. If we never step back and take a look at where we're going in our relationship with God, in our relationship with others, in the things that we prioritize, the things that we hold most dear, if we don't take the time to step back and ponder that and really look at what are we investing in our lives, into in our lives, what are our little mini gods that need to be dealt with and gotten rid of? There's a lot of things that we do and we embrace and that we buy and that we cherish that really are not that important compared to the other things in life. So he's saying, you know, take the time, take the time. Then he goes on to say, I have always found God to be exceedingly generous. Whenever I extract myself from hyperactivity to give space to quiet contemplation, the Lord gives me more than I can imagine. God's consistent generosity has strengthened my conviction about the value of stillness in our lives expressed eloquently by the psalmist in Psalms 127. Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. It is vain for you to rise early and put off your rest at night, to eat bread earned by hard toil. All this God gives to his beloved in sleep. Okay. In other words, we're so busy, we're so active, we're so concerned about making money and getting everything done and everything perfected in life, which is impossible. He's saying, you know, give that time to the Lord and he will give you what you need. And so it says, one ancient Greek philosopher famously quipped, "The unexamined life is not worth living." Unfortunately, popular culture seems to be built around avoiding calm and contemplative space to examine one's life. If we want to recover our true spiritual creativity, both as individuals and as a society, we must recover a capacity for stillness. We must rediscover the ancient Pauline wisdom, St. Paul wisdom, that enjoins us to think frequently and deeply about whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious. He wrote that in the book, in the letter to the Philippians. Perhaps we can begin by contemplating the example of the Lord himself. The most spiritually creative man who ever walked this earth, who would withdraw to deserted places to pray. You know as well as I do that Jesus never needed to pray as God, but as a fully human, fully God, he needed to pray. And he was also showing us that we need to pray. We need quiet time with the Lord. We need to be away from the madness and the noise. Even music that's beautiful, it makes your heart sing. All of that needs to be silenced and just be quiet. Reading, praying, listening for the Lord. Okay? And then he gives some suggestions on how to be more still and to contemplate. All right, and he says, decide prayerfully what you will do to create more contemplative space in your life. Be deliberate. The Carmelites call this a plan of life, where you make a schedule that you try to stick to, that you really commit to, that builds time in your day for communing with the Lord. It could be 5 minutes. It can be 2 hours, whatever. Whatever you feel the Lord is calling you to. And also, it will grow on you. And you will find miraculously that you're able to get things done that you thought you would never be able to get things done, done if you were spending time with the Lord. Okay, or just reading a good spiritual book or something, you know, having a cup of tea while you're looking at nature and thanking the Lord and talking to him about it. These refresh us, they grow us, they renew us, and life becomes a beautiful thing when we give time to him. Kathleen says it all the time, you cannot outgive God. You give him, you know, your 5 loaves and 2 fishes, and he will give you a entire meal for all of your days. He does. He does. I remember when I was looking into being Catholic, joining a Catholic church, I read Scott Hahn's Rome Sweet Home book, and he was talking about how when he got exposed to the rosary, he was hesitant to this was before he was Catholic. He didn't really want to pray the rosary because he had prejudice against it from the church he belonged to and his upbringing. But he felt called to pray it for some reason. And he was still studying, and he would pray the rosary when he knew he needed to be studying. Part of that study time he would dedicate to the rosary. And he found that devoting his time to that prayer would bring enormous grace to his life. And he became a real passionate believer in the power of the rosary and that quiet pondering of Jesus' life, which is what the rosary is all about, pondering Jesus' life. And so he took it up and he kept doing it even though he wasn't Catholic. So that, you know, that time of prayer or reading a good spiritual book or something, you will never regret it. Okay? And then he says about the fine arts, painting, music, drama, sculpture, architecture, dance are fields of natural contemplation. They are spaces where beauty, truth, and goodness are explored, savored, and reflected upon. So what role could these fine arts play in your life? You know, I love classical music. I was raised on it. I love it. I love listening to it. It's so beautiful. It had to be created by God. So, you know, and it's the beauty of art in the world. I'm talking about classic art. And all of that, it speaks to your soul. So contemplate some of those things. Go online, you know, and Google and look at these beautiful pictures and artwork and sculptures and stuff. Bring that beauty into your life and focus on that instead of, you know, watching the news and listening to all the bad news all the time. You know, we have to watch the news. We need to know what's going on. We need to pray about what's going on, but not do that 24/7 and look at, feed your eyes and your mind with beauty. The Word of God. The prayers of the faithful, the Mass, the sacraments, you know, the art. It's just so many things. But I just wanted to share a little of my own experience. I have to go pretty soon. But basically, I have found that if I get up a little earlier than everybody else, I'm not talking about an hour, maybe half an hour or so, get up a little earlier than the rest of the household, and I light a candle, when it's dark outside, turn a Christmas tree on, or some of my pretty little white lights, or I look out the window at the stars and the moon, and I just relish the beauty of this season, its stillness, and I share my heart with the Lord. I tell him how much I appreciate what he's given us in this season and the beauty of these things that I don't get to see in the rest of the year. It brings about great joy, and I hear his voice when I take that time to listen. Lord, speak to me. Help me to know what you want me to do and be today. What do you want me to talk about on the radio? I'm telling you, if you do it, he will speak to you. Okay? I'm sorry, I have to go. I didn't get to do everything I wanted to. But next time we're together, we will be talking about Pope Francis' latest encyclical on the heart of Jesus in our hearts. And until next week, may the Lord richly, richly bless you and keep you, answer your prayers, and comfort you. Please pray for me. I'll be praying for you. God bless you all. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.